Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Avatar, The Last Airbender, the extended edition. I'm Ez.
And I'm Lottie.
For some of you, this will be welcome back.
But if you're new here, we are husband and wife that run two fandom podcasts together, Shell Cottage Radio, a Cozy Potter podcast, which is a Harry Potter podcast only.
And the extended edition, where we bounce from fandom to fandom, but often linger in a galaxy far, far away.
Our current obsession is the Avatar, The Last. Sounded like Omega. Last Airbender. Our current obsession is the Avatar The Last Airbender show on Netflix.
And today we're here to break down episode 4, Into the Dark, and episode 5, Spirited Away. For each episode, we'll give you a quick summary of the events and then share our raw first impressions and thoughts. Lottie will start us off with a summary of episode 4, Into the Dark.
Episode 4, Into the Dark. In episode 4, the narrative deepens with Aang and Iroh imprisoned by the Earth Kingdom, facing starkly different destinies. Iroh, known as the Dragon of the West, is destined for the Pit, a labor camp, due to his fearsome reputation and the losses he inflicted during his military campaigns. Aang, on the other hand, is taken to King Bumi, his childhood friend from 100 years ago, who has been hardened and somewhat deranged by a century of war and leadership burdens. Bumi's erratic behavior swings between nostalgic memories and imposing deadly challenges on Aang to prove his Avatar worthiness. At the same time, Sokka and Katara are tipped off by Sai to use the secret tunnels beneath the palace, and they embark on a mission to rescue Aang. Their journey through the haunted tunnels forces them to confront personal disagreements and reflect on their family dynamics. Meanwhile, Iroh's transport to the Pit triggers flashbacks, revealing his fatherly affection for Zuko, shaped by the loss of his own son, Lu Ten. This backstory helps understand Iroh and Zuko's unique bond, culminating in Zuko's daring rescue of Iroh. The episode reaches its climax, with Bumi challenging Aang to the duel to the death. This is to test Aang's ability and decision-making, but also to teach him a lesson. It reflects Bumi's bitterness over Aang's absence during the Fire Nation's cruel warfare. The timely arrival of Sokka and Katara, guided by a badger mole, prevents tragedy. Aang's non-violent resolution and commitment to saving the world with his friend's support inspire Bumi to re-engage in the battle against the Fire Nation. Sai's decision to expose the spy ring, motivated by his son Teo and the Avatar's return, signals a turning point in the Earth Kingdom's resistance, concluding a narrative of redemption, family bonds, and the complexities of leadership and war.
Into the dark we go, my friends. Wow. Don't worry, though, because there's a secret tunnel. Secret tunnel.
is so triggering.
I mean, whoo, the acoustics were great.
It's great. It's great.
They were so good. This episode is emotional. It's jam-packed.
Oh, and, right at the beginning.
There's a lot. There's quite a lot. So your quick initial reaction.
I think, well, I got to say, it's very emotional in the beginning.
Yep.
But then some of the later stuff, I would say, I don't think this season has filler episodes, but if I had to crown a filler episode, I think it would be this one.
Wow. It's filler in terms of it's filled with emotion.
It is, actually.
So,
for me, the beginning and the end are the best parts. Yeah. In the middle, there's some downtime. And, of course, I love that they included the secret tunnels. Once Teo said secret tunnels, I think every Avatar Last Airbender fan is triggered. And
yeah,
I was like, nah, they're not going to do the secret tunnels right now, right? And then they did.
And they went secret. Top secret.
The secret tunnel band is back.
Yeah, it was great.
That was awesome.
Okay.
How was your first?
First reaction on this one? Yeah, it was good. I was good. I think this is the one time where I said last episode that I'm pretty optimistic on this whole series. And the only thing that kind of, you know, we had a whole episode about casting and how great cast is and all that stuff. So Bumi is still well cast. It's just, you could tell there was a lot of prosthetic and, you know, like it was, you had to.
Yeah.
You had to. I mean, in anime, there's only so much you can do when you're trying to, like, kind of change this over to live action.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to do, because that was a crazy character in anime.
Yes, he is.
He's wild. And he's, like, over 100 years old.
Yes.
But he's ripped out of his mind. And he can do all sorts of crazy stuff. Yeah. So, such a weird character. They did a pretty good job with it. But I just kind of, for a second, wasn't, you know, totally. It's hard. It was hard to. Yeah. The guy did a great job. It was still really well done. That was my only thing where when I first saw him, I was like, eh. But then as we went on, you get used to it. It's the initial sort of like just seeing him, and then you're like, okay, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I feel like I never say anything negative, so please take that with like a ton of positive, because I do love that character, and I thought his voice was really cool. Really, really, really well done.
Yeah, he did a great job. Can I chime in since we're talking about Bumi? Because probably of the entire series, this is also my biggest air quote negative. If there's something negative that someone said, you need to point something negative out right now.
Oh boy.
Or you can never have breakfast again.
Whoa.
I'd be like, good for me. That means I can fast a little longer. Sorry.
You would never let that go.
No, I love it. Breakfast is actually my favorite meal of the day. Yeah. But Bumi. I didn't have a problem actually with the actor or the prosthetics or the costume. I actually liked it how they, like you said, brought that to life in live action. Yeah. I think the actor did a great job from what they told him to do, I think. I am not sure if I like the change in King Bumi's character. To me, in the original animated version, I love him. He almost had a crazy version of Tom Bombadil vibe to me.
Okay.
In the animated version.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he was definitely not that resentful and bitter and hurt and scarred from the war. He was way more just, I mean, maybe they did include something that we don't see in the animated version. Maybe he went crazy a little bit because of all this. I'm sure there was some time where he was very resentful when he was younger, but he's this older guy who's just, you know, goes with the flow, whatever. When he's captured in the original animated show, he's captured by Azula, taken to the Earth, to the Fire Nation, like, just imprisoned. He's like, oh, whatever. He laughs it off, like his snorting laugh.
Right.
And it doesn't matter to him if it's, is it good or bad? Who cares? Like, it's
it's
very, I'm not really
connected.
No, he's not really emotionally attached to whatever happens. He's just here still.
Okay.
And this version of Bumi in the live action is scared and bitter. And they make it seem like the long war has made him go crazy. That's the reason why he's gone crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. It's like, they make it seem, they make him more realistic, but he, to me, is not this mad genius anymore we know from the original. To me, they don't feel 100% right.
Yeah, okay.
And definitely not when he mocks Aang and the genocide of his people. That bothers me the most. I remember when we first watched it, you were like, oh, he's trying to...
he's trying to get under his skin.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's trying to provoke him. But I was like, if that's your friend, you would find other ways to provoke him.
Yeah.
That was not cool.
Right. I felt like later on, I mean, that's what he was trying to do when they fight was to show him all of the things that he's had to endure and that he had to make all these different hard choices, and to be the Avatar, you've got to make all those different hard choices. But you're right. The way in which he... I mean, it's almost like he really wanted Aang to be in a different place than he was, or further along in his Avatar journey or whatever. Bumi was jaded for sure by the war, and he's changed. So they definitely took him a darker, more sinister route there, a little crazy. But he comes back. I mean, but you're right. That one line was pretty strong. It was pretty, you know, the mocking of all of his people being gone was rough. That was pretty far, right? Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah, so... I think it's coming from a place of like, hey, this did happen. This is a serious thing. And he didn't think Aang was taking it serious enough.
Yeah.
And he really wanted to test him and try him and push him well beyond his limits.
Yeah. So. And in the animated show, it's way more comical, the introduction of Bumi and how that plays out. But
again,
it's okay to adapt it. I understand it for the live action show. And like you said, I do like that he points out the possibility of making decisions like that.
Yeah, yeah.
As a king, you are in charge. And like he says, who gets the next, last fund or
food rations.
Food rations, an orphanage or another village over here that's just military. Been bombed. Or the military that need to fight for us. Like it is very emotional and deeper problems that are, almost impossible to decide.
Yeah, I thought that conversation was the best bit of Bumi, really, and where he was really kind of, you got this a peek into his past 100 years, and it's real. I mean, 100, it's a long time, so he's really been dealing with this for a long, long time. Yeah, he makes that point. He's like, you haven't lived 100 years. You may be 100 years old, but you haven't lived 100 years.
And he's totally right,
Yeah, and he's just like, I've suffered through all of this, probably longer than most in the world. Right.
He even says, when Aang asks him, how are you still alive? And he's like, oh, diet and luck. Mm-hmm. And then he says something like, I'm not so sure, though, if it's a good luck or bad luck.
Dang. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, I get it. They took more of the playfulness.
He's lost his will to live.
Yeah, they've taken some of his playfulness and some of that joking around. They've really turned it up very quickly to more serious tones. And it's just part of the adaptation, something you have to kind of do with that character. There's going to be more, though, right? There's going to be more Bumi later on. So we'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So to dive into all this, I mean, we start off, as you said, with, again, my favorite character, Uncle Iroh, talking to Aang. It's awesome. It is awesome. Every time that they meet, you feel sort of this respect. You can almost sense this respect that he has for the Avatar. And the Avatar is really still, he's upset, right? Yep. This is like, we had things going in possibly the right direction, but now he's captured, he's lost his friends, and he's just, this journey is stopped in its tracks. And it's Zuko.
Yeah.
And then he sees the sacrifice.
Zuko.
Right. Yeah. So he's so upset because Zuko seems to keep getting in his way.
Mm-hmm.
And he really misunderstands Zuko and his character and just who he is. And he speaks those things. He speaks like statements as if they're fact about Prince Zuko. And that's sort of where Uncle Iroh puts a stop. Like, no, sorry, Avatar. You may be powerful and you may be here to save the world, but you don't understand this boy.
No,
not at all. And it's just a moving moment.
Yes.
Where, how does he put it? He says something to the effect of...
So Aang says in the cell, he says, so that's why Zuko is so hot to catch me, so he can win this war for his dad? And Iroh's like, Zuko's victory lies not in winning the war, but in winning his life back. And Aang pleads with Iroh, you could show him this isn't the way. He'll listen to you. I mean, he owes you that much. And Iroh says, on the contrary, it is I who owe him far more than I can ever repay.
Oh, cue the music. And I mean, it's such a it's such a powerful moment. What they do later on in this very same episode is they show us what he means by
it
that.
It is so emotional.
Yeah, so they do a flashback, essentially, where you go back and you learn sort of what Prince Zuko does for Iroh.
Yeah.
They're at the ceremony.
Lutin's funeral.
Lutin's funeral. And they're in line, and as he's coming up to him, he hands him back this token,
mm-hmm.
right, that was given to him. And
by Lutin.
Yeah. Lutin, what does he say? Doesn't he say, like, he gives him this token, and it's meant to, this belongs to someone who's
destined to do great things. Something like that,
yeah. So someone who's destined to do great things. And it's so wild. Before he gives him that, he actually says that it's a great honor for Lutin and his father, Uncle Iroh, to have died in the service of the Fire Nation. And if you really listen to it, go back and listen to it again, he actually says for both of you to die. And what he's acknowledging is that a part of Uncle Iroh was lost, and he passed.
He's passed, yeah.
He's gone, and he died.
Yeah.
Even though he's this man sitting there, he's dead. He walks away from him, he turns around, and he comes back, and he gives him his life back.
Mm-hmm.
With that token, with that badge, he gives it back to him and basically says that, like, what your son gave to me, I'm giving to you, and you are destined to do great things.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Right? He inspires him to do those things. And so the Dragon of the West will rise again.
Yes.
And he starts to cry at that moment. And that's what he means when he's talking to Aang, is that I owe him so much more.
Yeah. He brought me back.
He owes him his life.
Yeah.
Right? He was dead, and Zuko brought him back.
Lutin's funeral was one of the most emotional moments, and the moment actually when Zuko's and Iroh's relationship really became what it is today. Like this almost like father-son relationship instead of nephew and uncle.
Right.
And one of the best additions they made in the live-action show. And of course, they queued up Leaves from the Vine.
Yeah.
The song that, I mean, I don't know. If you're an Avatar fan and you don't tear up when you hear that song, I don't know what.
Right. Well, I guess it's been said. You know, what are you doing? Why are you even watching the show? I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. He said, again, he was talking about how it gave him strength to have this token from Lutin. And mm-hmm. so that strength that was given to him during a tough time with his father, he gave it back to Iroh. Yeah.
And then I love how he sits down next to him. Everyone else just keeps going, okay. Cool, we said our words, sorry for you, and now we go back to our lives. But Zuko, he actually sits down with him.
He sits in the empty chair, which belongs to...
Oh my goodness, yes, I wanted to read that. Yes, say it, sorry.
Well, I mean, I believe it belongs to his wife. Or, I mean, that would have been his wife sitting there with him, but that chair is there for her because she has passed, I believe. We don't know.
Yes, thank you for reminding me because I wanted to read this. We were interested in what happened to Iroh's wife, to Lutin's mom. Why is she never mentioned? Yeah. And the short answer is we don't know. No one knows.
No one knows.
But
yeah.
There is fan theories out there that I, air quote, like. It's not, you know, it's not a nice story, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
So this guy on Reddit wrote, we know nothing at all about Iroh's wife. Given her lack of presence or mention, both in the present day and in various Fire Nation-related flashbacks, it's safe to assume she probably died years before the series began. And Zuko's mom mentioned Iroh as the only person friendly to her in the capital. She probably died before Ozai married Ursa. And some fans have even suggested she died giving birth to Lutin, which, while never confirmed, would go a long way to explain her lack of presence and mention and give another reason why Lutin's death was so tragic. She died so he could be born, but then he tragically dies young anyway.
Yeah. Wow. So what you're saying is that Iroh's wife, from the source material or from other, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but essentially in flashbacks or whatever, you have Lady Ursa And she shows up and it says that there is no one who was friendly to her there.
Right.
And you would assume that Iroh's wife would have been that friend.
Right,
possibly.
Her sister-in-law. That would be her sister-in-law.
Right.
Yeah.
And you would assume that she would have been a friend. And so when they say that there was no friend for her there, it makes you think that she was already passed.
Yeah.
And so probably likely passed in childbirth.
Yeah.
Right. So. Yeah, even more tragic. It's like, so Lu Ten is the continuation of, like, that's, he's this reminder. He's
right.
Everything that Iroh has left.
Yeah.
And so when he dies, it's like everything is gone. His whole family is gone,
right?
Right? And so this, even the memory of Lu Ten's mother,
yeah.
Sort of. So.
And from what from what Zuko tells us about Lu Ten, he seemed to be very much like Iroh,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Yeah, yeah. So sad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was definitely just a tear-jerking moment, and it started tear-jerking, and then we get to it during the funeral.
Yeah.
And
oh
gosh,
that was probably one of the most, like I said, emotional moments in this show.
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
So
great addition.
I would say for me though, that's pretty much as far as things go. I did think there were a few really good jokes by Boomy.
I
thought those were pretty
funny. When they were sitting at the dinner table.
Yeah, he's asking him to kind of pick up on, like pick between his foods or whatever. So I thought that was kind of funny. But other than that, I mean, you know, there is an another emotional scene where Iroh is confronting the military earthbender.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you could see a lot of anger from the earthbender because of his brother manning the walls of Ba Sing Se.
Yeah.
And war.
Right.
And they both lost someone really important to them during that time. And there's just.
Yes.
Still almost like an old war fury sort of takes over Iroh as well, too.
Right.
And he's just reminding that, you know, there's been enough war. He's done.
There's assumptions, you know.
Right.
He just sees him as this cruel leader. He is the brother to the Fire Lord, born into royalty. He actually should be the Fire Lord, which is another topic, but I want to quote Tiffany O'Malley on this when she said hurt people.
Yeah,
because he definitely, his soul's hurt, still hurting because of the loss of his brother.
Yeah.
And he takes that chance to kind of get revenge or whatever you want to call it, and punches Iroh
in the
gut.
Yep.
And it's you know, totally, like, Iroh can't, he's an old man, he doesn't, and the worst part about it is just the Earthbender's assumption. He's escorting Iroh and just assumes something about this person, who he must be, and he tells him that he's lost his brother, right, because of him, because of Iroh, and accuses him not knowing love and loss.
Yeah.
And Iroh, just quiet, he doesn't say anything.
Yep.
Really,
yep.
To that, he doesn't say, oh, you know what? I lost people too. No. He's just quiet.
Yeah, I know.
And there is some strength in that.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't deny, they have done terrible things.
No, he doesn't. And the other thing that he does too that's very subtle is this whole caravan stops.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't insult them, but he does say something that is triggering.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of knows that he's asking for this gut punch later on.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he does it is to slow them down. He wants to stop and eat up time because Zuko is on his way.
Oh.
Yeah. He tosses the coin earlier.
That's true.
And so he already, even though he told his nephew to run and save himself, why do that?
He knows his nephew. They have this trust.
Yeah, and he knows over those 3 years, the person that he has grown into.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. He knows that no matter what I tell him, he's still going to come after me.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. So to help him out, that seems like a good spot. They're not where there's more military or whatever, so they're out on the road. It's a good spot where Zuko could maybe get some advantage and so it's crazy. I mean,
good point.
Yeah, just thought it was cool. And he has to suffer for that. And it's, they go ahead and take that moment and they bring us back to the old war and take us through those emotions. Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Another interesting thing was and I don't know anything about this, but the origins of Amashu.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. It was
Yeah,
these two lovers, right, who were meeting secretly in the mountain, and they were tunneling through, and we get the crazy badger, Mr. Badger Mole guy. All right, they're blind, and they're in there kind of they're the ones who are making the they can sense emotions and feelings and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that was cool. As we're going through the secret tunnel, we got this backstory, which is pretty cool.
How many times, I mean, how often can you say, hear the word secret tunnel and not cue up the song in your head?
Oh, it's every time. I know.
Right?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I've even heard it completely in a different setting. So I don't even know. I heard the word secret and then later the same day, tunnel somewhere else. And it just, even, I mean, one was 7 o'clock in the morning and one was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I heard secret earlier in the day and then tunnel. And
secret
I was like,
tunnel,
secret tunnel. Yeah. So, but I thought it was a cool, I mean, a cool little origin story. I just didn't.
Yeah. They made
that.
It really cool. Like the
totally
art was
different,
really cool,
right? It's totally different. This whole, like you were saying that, Katara doesn't go in here with,
it was kind of awkward when
Sokka.
Katara and Sokka walk into the tunnel, but this episode's about a different kind of love. So it's in the original episode with this tunnel, it's Katara and Aang and they get a little closer and it's dark and a little romantic between those two
bumping into each other,
and I think it was a little awkward when you see Katara and Sokka walk in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's gonna happen here?
But it's
okay because this is about different kinds of love and it ended up being fine that way, and they go through some family issues.
They do, yes, and they work out some of the animosity that's built up between them in the last episode, and they come to a resolution there, and we get this idea that the Badger Mole is sensing their fear, but then will also sense their love for one another and their caring. They both say, you know, sorry, sort of love you right before.
That was very sweet. Yeah,
it was sweet. And then Sokka does the logical thing and wonders if this Badger Mole can just take a verbal command.
Right. Maybe we can just straight up tell him what we need.
This is where we need to go. Do you mind?
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't have anything else, I have probably 2 points that I want to just point out as something strong and something weak.
Okay.
So really strong for me was Katara's line when she fights off Jet, right? She says goodbye, Jet. And Jet, he can't move because Katara's bending is stronger than before. And he says, look at the power you have. That's all because of me. Katara turns around and says, that wasn't you. That was me.
I know. I love that. I love it.
So people, good.
Gosh, people try to steal your thunder sometimes, right? And even if they...
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Were a part of your getting to that or whatever.
Right, people they who, helped you along the way find that. But
and again, people though who support you like that, and then they want to steal all the cred. They want to say they might have been just a small sort of like push in the right direction, a true master and guide by the side.
Right.
No, they will deflect. If I mean, you give them credit, they'll feed it right back. It's all you.
Yeah.
It's always been you, and it's always been inside. And that's just something that, you know, you help guide out or whatever. So he ended up being sort of just this. I don't know. He represented this like young girl meets boy, broken heart and sort of thing. But yeah, that was a strong line for her.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. It shows a lot of confidence to say or take a lot of confidence to say, no, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
It was inside of me, this power the whole time. Thanks for helping me bring it out. But it's not on you, bro.
Yeah. Not on you, bro.
And then one of the weaker scenes is also at the end when we have the scene with Bumi, who is going absolutely crazy, and he challenges Aang, you got to make this tough decision, right? And he has the boulders over both of their heads. Aang can't help him support both of the boulders. And Bumi doesn't really care, which is tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure, though, about how this is all resolved, because Katara and Sokka just come in from the tunnels, and just a split second, they're able to analyze the situation and just help Aang. There's no explanation. Just come in like, go soccer, boom, slide over here.
Yeah.
Dang. And it just seems really, I don't know.
Abrupt. Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. I did at least like the theme behind it because they come in and what he's trying to show Bumi is that like, hey, friends still like I'm still your friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if we've messed up and things have sort of we've grown distant or whatever, I'm still here.
Yeah.
And he pulls out the whistle, like the bison whistle that he made.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is how I use this to call a friend. And he hands it back to him. And it was made. I think that takes him back to their friendship.
Right.
And then he also sees that Aang has other friends who have just showed up here to save him. And it's cool. He nods a little bit and kind of has that look in his eye like, all right, I got you. I think you're going to do this differently. You're going to do this
your
in your own
approach is different. Yeah.
Yeah. Your own way. Right. So the Avatar will find. Well, yeah, he has to be himself. He has to find himself, and this is what he wants to do.
We'll see this
all the way through, right? It's just like
this is Aang's journey.
Yeah, does he go it alone, or does he let people, you know, close to him help and then endanger them? What does he do?
Ooh, that's very much like Harry in the end. Or not just in the end, Harry Potter. You know, he always tells his friends, no, you're not coming with me, especially in the book. He's
right.
Like, you're not coming. I have to do this alone. And they're like, yeah, right.
Good luck with that, buddy.
Yeah. You wouldn't survive without Hermione. Not 1 minute.
No.
I do like the theme of friendship here for sure. And it's great that he has his friends and it's important. But to me, it just doesn't really resolve the deeper issue that Bumi brings up in this case. You know, having to make difficult decisions.
Yes, but I would counter with the ultimate difficult decision that he has to make is whether to allow his friends to help him or not.
Hmm.
That's what I think is that they're trying to be endangered. And right now it doesn't seem that way. But by the time we get to the end, that's the huge thing, which is just sort of like, does he still allow them to fight in the fight? Can Katara fight when the Fire Nation is showing up in the north?
Yeah.
And does Team Avatar unite and do their thing? Or does he go it alone? Mm-hmm. So here it's sort of like that is this, you know, big decision that Aang has to make because he is putting their lives at risk. He is saying like, look, it's possible that they won't make it. And he chooses to trust in his friends and move forward with that. So that's a tough choice, but still I get what you're saying is, and what Bumi is saying is that you've got 100 years of these tough choices where, you know, he didn't have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
People didn't step up around him and he had to make hard choices without friends. And his friend was gone and left him, you know, so totally different side of the coin.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Actually, now that I connect this, this whole theme of friendship is definitely here. And being alone versus also like counting on your friends. It's okay to be alone. We all have a path we have to walk alone, a part of our path at least. But it's great at the end. Another one more strong scene was when Iroh joins his mission, his team, his crew on the boat. It's not like Zuko asked for Iroh to come with him, but Iroh just showed up.
Yeah.
And Zuko even says, I don't need a babysitter. But Iroh says, how about a friend?
Yep.
And that everything he needs is on this boat.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Such a good ending to this episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it was awesome.
That was great.
Oh boy. Okay. So episode four, Into the Dark, was great. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Let's dive into episode five, Spirited Away.
Yeah.
In episode five, Aang and his friends continue their journey northward amidst growing rumors of the Avatar's return. Aang's inherent desire to help everyone complicates their mission, leading them into a forest devastated by the Fire Nation. There they encounter a local whose son vanished while seeking food, highlighting the land's sickness since its destruction. Venturing into the forest, Aang, Katara, and Sokka find themselves in the spirit world. This mystical journey introduces them to various spirit creatures and forces them to confront their deepest fears and traumas. They don't know they're being played by the malevolent spirit Ko, the Face Stealer. Katara relives her mother's death while Sokka faces his father's disappointment, revealing their innermost wounds. Meanwhile, Zuko's challenges escalate as Azula undermines him and his crew's loyalties dwindle. Zuko and Iroh encounter a bounty hunter named June and hire her, despite Zuko's objections, to find the Avatar and bring him to them. The episode deepens with Aang's spiritual encounter with his former mentor, Gyatso, who guides him on facing Ko. Learning he must physically visit Roku's shrine in the Fire Nation to defeat Ko, Aang resolves to embark on this perilous journey alone.
Quick reaction to this interesting episode. What do you think?
I love it. It was great. I think it's, you know, I it was a very, I don't know. I mean, it was good, but it's also not one of my favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. I think there's just a lot of, like the spirit world was kind of weird and the best part was going back to see his mentor. I feel like that was really cool that he got to go back and see Gyatso.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was tough. And it's also really tough to imagine that, Katara and Sokka just stay there while he goes to the Fire Nation shrine, right?
I mean, yeah, it's just like, which is good. Definitely not the case in the original, but it's interesting that they do join him on his journey in the spirit world. But again, I think it is very, very clever how they put so many different episodes into one, and it all made sense. Like, if you assume, okay, they can join him in the spirit world, somehow he made him come along. Then it did make sense. And it did make sense that they go through their most difficult memories and have to face it again. And Katara says it to Jet, that her memory of her mother and watching her, you know, die is something that just keeps coming back to her. Her brain almost tried to bury that memory somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it keeps coming back, meaning you have to face it again. And this whole episode, I think it's really good, actually, because it starts this whole theme of we have to begin processing and then letting go of the past. Mm-hmm. And part of it is also, unfortunately for Aang, letting go again of his former master, Gyatso.
Yeah.
Which is interesting how that plays out. So we'll get into that in a second. Do you want to go over like strong scenes that you liked, or should I?
Yeah, I think the strongest scene for me was probably, again, his master. As you said, that's what I highlighted as my strongest point. I mean, it's just like he gets to go back in the spirit world and see him, and it takes you back all the way to episode one, where he is essentially telling him that there'll come a time where you wish that you had more time with your masters. Yes. And he, even when he gets this second opportunity to meet his master and to talk with him, he still is focused on his mission. And now he's actually doing what Gyatso wanted him to do, becoming the Avatar, doing what Avatars do, right? Completing his mission, becoming the legend of Aang. And he's on his journey, right? And he's there to give him some little bit of guidance here in the spirit world. He stayed behind. He did not move on. He waited. He waited because he believed there would come a time when Aang would need him one more time. And it's like the burden he has. They get to meet. There's a good greeting. But that sit down resolution talk, that's never going to come.
No.
That will never be there. Yeah. And actually, I think this, as sad as it is, it's important that it didn't happen.
Yeah, he lets Aang believe, no, yeah, you can come back. But he doesn't tell him
right. That
I might not be here when you come back.
Yeah.
And can I read to you what I wrote down to that scene? I said, Gyatso's spirit lingered in the spirit world before moving on in the great cycle to meet Aang there. But it seems like he was only able to stay for one more meeting. What do you think? What kind of path did he choose? And is he stuck in the spirit world, almost like the ghosts in Harry Potter that are not able to move on? But why then was he gone when Aang comes back?
Yeah, I think like you said, he's only meant to be there for one. He gets one chance.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's sort of one last request, which is to be around for one more meeting in the spirit world in
to guide
case...
him.
Yeah, and it's really his the main thing that he's there for is to tell him it's not your fault.
Mm.
It was not your fault.
Yeah, you couldn't have done anything.
You
true.
You couldn't have done anything. That was all he wanted to stay there for, was to make sure that he knew, not your fault, Aang. I'm your friend. Continue on. All is well. And that part, that was a bit of his burden that he could relieve. He wanted to relieve that little bit because it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Now, the hard reality that he'll never get to go back with his old friends and sit down and have tea again and talk and have that extra time with his masters, that never comes.
Mm-mm.
And he's not allowed to have a second meeting.
Yeah.
Because that's the hard reality.
Yeah.
And I think if you would have done that second meeting where they laughed it up and they had their final, it sort of takes away the tragedy that propels Aang into this whole journey.
Yeah.
And it's... I don't know. It's sad, but at the same time, we're glad they got to meet again one more time and he got to pass on one more message or one more lesson or one more just comfort to Aang, you know? And I think Aang, he lives on in Aang because Aang just continues, like I said, at Kyoshi's shrine.
Right.
That's the last thing that really calms him down and allows him to get into his meditative state.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually his teachings that he's passing on to Katara in the first episode with
her
waterbending.
True.
Right? Helping her seek balance.
True.
So all of that is still playing out through Aang, and they're still influencing the world 100 years later. But you're just not allowed to have that final meeting because that needs to be left unresolved. That's a pain. That's a pain that Aang needs to carry with him.
Yeah.
He'll never get to go back and speak to those airbenders one last time.
True.
So.
But what do you think is the price that Gyatso paid? Because it seems like he did. It's not just like, oh, I want to stay here for a little bit until I can move on. Or was the price to stay in the spirit world for 100 years?
Yeah, it could have been. I don't know. What do you have to do to make that happen?
We can only theorize. We don't know. But
because I feel like it's the price might be to relive that last encounter or that last goodbye one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he knows, again, this time he even has the knowledge that Aang is leaving and I have to let him go and I can't tell him that this will be the last time.
Yeah.
Just like the first time.
Right.
First time I didn't know.
He didn't know,
The second time he does. Yeah. And he still can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
And he has to let Aang walk away. I don't know. That could be the price that he had to pay just to give him that extra bit of information.
Mm-hmm.
Or he just has extra power to kind of stay there. I don't really know. One, wish or he has some, I don't know. Because everyone else sort of moved on, but he stayed. I just think it's so cool. So cool that he did. Tragic, but it was needed, necessary for him to grow. So
yes. Mm-hmm. That was a cool scene, for sure.
Yeah. For me, I guess, so other scenes, I think the talking owl, the spirit owl.
I love that they encounter, his name is Wan Shi Tong.
Wan Shi Tong.
And
okay.
He is the spirit of knowledge. The owl in the spirit world that they meet, and I don't know if you remember, they actually in the original, they meet him later in the library.
Okay.
He's that spirit in the library that is not all friendly, for sure. He lets them walk around, but he's very careful because last time the firebenders came and they looked for critical information. What makes you think your information won't hurt? But, you're doing the same thing. You guys want to hurt people with that knowledge.
Yeah.
I won't let you have my knowledge to hurt each other and bring this world to an end. And he's very taking no side. He's just interested, like, keeping his knowledge safe in this library. And that's why he gets super angry when he finds out they did. Because they promised we won't do anything. We just want to look around. We're just super interested in this place. But then they do go find that crucial information about the eclipse, I think. Yeah. And that's where Wan Shi Tong gets extremely angry. And I don't know if they will meet him again later, but I thought it was awesome that he showed up here.
Well, I think what's even more cool is, and I could be wrong, but I think that was also Master Oogway. I think that
the
was also
voice, yes.
The voice actor might have been Master Oogway. And so I'm just thinking he went to the spirit. Yeah. He left the physical world as a turtle, and ended up an owl, barn owl, you know, in the spirit world. I just think it's pretty cool. That's could be awesome. Wrong. We'll double check that. But I think that might be Master Oogway.
That's funny. I love that.
So, another one, third and final one, and then I'll let you kind of go through your list, is June. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's June, but it was actually July, if you know what I'm saying, like between her and Iroh.
It's
I mean, I thought the Fire Nation was bringing the heat, but June walked in and said, hey, I mean... Thought it couldn't get any hotter, and she just, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, your dad's kind of cute.
I know.
I was like, what? Like, that was pretty. She was something. Yeah. She was something. And I love it. I know it's just a little playful kind of, you know, thing, but I think it's they did it in the animated series. I'm so glad they did it here too.
Yes, and it looks. I mean, her beast looks phenomenal. Nyla, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it looks kind of scary though. Like got all those different like.
Oh yeah, it does. But it does in this.
Oh, I know,
show
but
too.
To see
I'm just saying. I'm just acknowledging they did a great job.
Yeah, they did a great job. But just the I mean, to see it live action, you think if those things were touching your face and stuff. Or
oh,
whatever,
I know. Yeah,
it's like they just feel a little. You know, I don't know. It's too much. it's you take like a dog's you know wet nose or whatever touching you or whatever, and it's just times a thousand. It's just all tentacles all over the place.
Well, yeah, and it's tongue that paralyzes you.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
I know, you're not a fan.
Forgot about that. So I thought her showing up was really cool, and the fact that they hire her and everything was great. And then we'll see more of her later. So, But yeah, that was it. Those are kind of my top three. Again, it wasn't like my favorite episode. Mm-hmm. It was just, and I think it's just, normally I'm really into Spirit Realm stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. It just... it was probably because the last episode was just so daggone emotional and I was so reeling from that I just sort of settled down and had to process. But it was good. It was still really cool. And I actually liked that that Sokka and Katara can go to the spirit realm.
Yeah.
Because we find out at the end.
That was interesting, yeah.
Yeah, we find out at the end that that's something that, you know, I mean, the spirits do want to come down and be mortal at the same time. And then for them to also, you know, it's this yin and yang.
To
back
visit
and forth.
Them in the spirit realm,
So I thought it was cool that Aang could bring them into that, and it was definitely necessary for them to go through that process.
So. Yeah. We do see Azula a little bit in this, and I thought that was also pretty interesting, because even to see that even Azula feels like she's not good enough, that makes me... almost feel sad for her a little bit, especially knowing her path in the end going forward, what she grows into. And I thought that was, again, phenomenal actress and her friends. I love that they're already there with her. I love May and Ty Lee, and they're this group and they follow her around. But they're also their own personalities, and they learn that following Azula later on doesn't mean everything to them. Azula is going to an extreme where they can't follow her. So just like the dynamics between those three. And then I did like the whole spirit realm thing. I love Yue's spirit, the fox. Foxes are some of my favorite animals, and this scene between Sokka and Yue's spirit, it just made me feel so peaceful. Like you're in this, I don't know, if all of a sudden looked more beautiful, the whole scene. You're in this forest and this beautiful fox spirit comes up. And her voice is very soothing when she speaks. That's where they meet for the first time. And she can wander both, right? The spirit realm and the physical, almost like the Avatar himself. And that's pretty cool. And she says something that's very, very true. She tells Sokka, very eye-opening to him. She says, pain makes you turn into someone you're not. And I feel like it's something we've all experienced. When we're hurt, we do and say things that we don't mean. And it almost feels like they don't even come from us, right?
Yeah.
When you're super stressed or hurt, by something or someone. Yeah, it feels like this is this other being inside of you that takes out these negative emotions, and it's not yourself. And we say it to each other. That's not, you know, you're not being yourself right now.
Yeah, for sure. It's something. Yeah, it's an outside force or whatever, right? It's almost more the it's not who you are.
And she helps him though to face that he has to face his fears and his pains, because she kind of points out, do you always use humor to avoid feeling your emotions?
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty good. So in Katara and Sokka, they face very painful memories from their childhood. And I must say, again, this show, every freaking episode, it gets so emotional. And I cried when I saw, when Katara saw her mother again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, and this is a very emotional topic, I'm sure most people who have lost someone they really love, and, you know, you have had dreams like this where you were reunited with that loved one, but something kind of tells you it can't be.
Yeah.
You know they're gone, yet it seems so real.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very, very emotional to see that in her eyes, and to see her, and it's, she's like, it's been so long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was very, very hard. Like, yeah, just intense to watch. And then this followed by this super intense scene where Katara had to watch her mother being burned.
Yeah.
So tragic and horrible. And oh my gosh, we're watching it right now on the TV again. Yeah. But it's one thing to see it in the anime, but it's another to watch it
live action.
In live action.
Yeah, it was something. I mean, it like, you know, the bit where, gosh, I mean, actually it's when Katara is trying to bend water to save her mother, it is what gives that firebender the cue that it's either she's in here or it is this woman.
Yeah.
Had she not have tried that, you know, it's one of those things where, like, she probably sat there and this is part of what she's processing. Was that her fault? Mm. Right? No, it's not her fault at all. That was the firebenders.
Yeah.
And so then her mother realizes what is happening, sees the water rising, knows that her daughter is a waterbender, and decides that she has to sacrifice herself. And she claims to be the waterbender and throws her hands up as if she's going to bend the water.
Right.
And that's, man, it was hard. It was hard to watch.
Yes.
And that was definitely a tearjerker.
I'm very interested to see if they pick up that scene later again. In the original series, she faces that scene way later in her journey again. And it has to do with that very firebender that she sees there.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know.
And this whole theme of forgiveness will play out later. And I don't know if they're going to include it or not. But yeah, we'll see. So, sorry, this is, I mean, like this whole show, that takes its ups and downs. And it's great moments, super sad moments. Very brave moments that we have, and I think it's just very, like you said, relatable, even though we're in this fantasy world, but all the themes that they bring up are so relatable to just life in general,
right?
So
it's crazy. Do you have anything else? There's another interesting one, that just the Spirit Co, right?
Yeah.
And there's a whole backstory that I didn't know about related to the faces.
Yes.
And I guess Zuko's mother?
Oh, this is great.
I didn't know anything about this. So, I mean, where is Zuko's mother?
Right.
Who is she? Why is she not around? There's this whole backstory to her and actually giving up her face.
Somehow related to Ko and Ko's mother's, like the spirit that's Ko's mother. I think we should talk about this in the next episode, because this is when, I think next episode is when Aang gets this totem that Roku stole from Ko, from the spirit.
Okay.
And that's where the mother comes in.
Gotcha.
So let's
Ko's scary, I'll say that.
Yes. In the animated show,
scary.
Ko, yes, so Aang is alone facing Ko in the spirit world. And Spirit, before he meets Ko, tells him, you can't show emotions. If you show your emotions, he will steal your face.
Mm-hmm.
So that for me was just imagining to be Aang in this moment, and you can't show emotions.
Yeah.
Not even like, you can't laugh, you can't scream for show fear. He has this straight, just keep a straight face, and otherwise his face will be gone.
Yeah.
So that was crazy. Sorry.
Just, yeah.
Cole's crazy.
Cole's crazy. Okay.
All right.
All right. Wait. I think that's it. Then we've kind of went a little long there, but yeah. So thanks, guys, for listening. Again, we'll be back here in just a little bit, but we'll be back with actually episode 6, Masks, and episode 7, The North. If you guys got thoughts, I want to share them with us. And actually, for anything future, and you know, anything that we do in terms of fandoms here on the Extended Edition, you can send that to send any messages to theflannelwizard@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at the Extended Edition. And as always, yip yip.
Yip yip.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.